Here's what's popping on today's episode.
Perfectionism has convinced us that all of our successes are the most important thing that's ever happened to anyone that knows us, and all of our failures are the most embarrassing, horrible thing that's ever happened, and that everyone's thinking about both all the time.
You'll never influence someone because of how amazing your body is, because you have the highest paying job. You influence people because of how you make them feel.
Hey guys, welcome back to Popping Perfectionism. We are so excited to have you here.
We're super giggly.
Yeah, but I'm excited for this episode. This is episode 6 of season 4. We're talking again about workplace and perfectionism.
I'm so sorry, y'all.
It's just having a breakdown of fit.
We've just been having a good time before recording, yeah. So I'm just...
We have been.
All the giggles.
Yeah. But we're going to start doing things a little differently. Just a tad. We feel like we've really packed in content into our episodes leading up to now. It's all really good content. And we've loved all of it. But we just don't want our episodes to be as like content heavy, like so dense. So we're going to reel it back in. We're going to, instead of packing stuff into, you know, a 45-minute hour-long episode, we're going to go for shorter episodes, and we're going to try to just narrow in on like 2 or 3 main points.
Yeah.
And just, you know, dial in on those instead of giving you guys like a fire hose of information.
I think because all of the information we do provide is really good, but sometimes it's just heavy. Like there's a lot to it. And I think sometimes when I mention it once, I assume everyone else is going to remember it too, but that's not really how it goes. So we have so much content in one episode that's like, you could do 10 episodes on one episode.
Yeah.
So we're just going to slow it down a little bit.
Take it easy.
Also, it provides a space to dig a little bit deeper into our own stories and experiences and be a little bit more vulnerable, I guess, about the things that we're sharing. So.
Yeah, because then we're not just breezing past everything and trying to like fit it all in. So you guys are going to get more for more.
This episode of Popping Perfectionism is brought to you by Market Social. Run your event like a human being. Simple event marketing and management built on text messaging so you can reach your people. Check out their link in our show notes. And if you're enjoying this episode, pause the show now and give Popping Perfectionism a 5-star review. In planning for this episode, we just wanted to like choose a few points of things that we have been thinking a lot about lately, specifically with perfectionism. And the first one is that showing up is better than not showing up at all.
Yeah.
This came to us because I literally cried after we recorded our last episode.
She did.
Like actual tears of sadness because I felt like I did a really bad job. I just felt like I didn't show up as my best self. I felt like I was really scattered. Even though I prepared a lot, I felt like maybe I overprepared and wanted to share too much. Then it was just spewing information and I was really sad that day. Like all of these things just piled on. We stopped recording and I was just like, that was super bad. Like we shouldn't even use that. We should just throw it away.
Yeah.
And Anna and Ryan are like, no, wait, what? Are you good? Like that are you was okay? Fine. Like that was really, really great. And well, they didn't say really, really great because I've done better. But that's the point, is that like you don't have to show up as excellent and mind-blowing and perfect every time you show up for something. Mm-hmm. Like every day you wake up, it's not going to be like, I'm going to like top what I did yesterday every single day. That would be impossible.
Yeah, literally. And then no one would like, and then if you only let yourself exist or show up when you are showing up better than you did before or perfect or almost perfect, then very few people would do anything, because how often does someone actually show up in that state? Like, you know, like it's really rare to be on your like A game.
Yeah.
And no one's on their A game like every day, you know?
Because if it's like a bell curve situation, then your super great days and your super, super bad days are at kind of a minimum.
Yeah.
And then the average days that are like not great but not super bad are more common. There's just like more of them, and that's fine. Like that's okay. That's the point, is like it's okay just to show up. It is about just showing up. And that sounds like kind of cheesy, I feel like, when I say it out loud, but it really resonated with me in that moment, because all I needed to do was show up and give it the best that I had that day. But sometimes perfectionism tells you that it's, you just shouldn't show up at all. You shouldn't speak at all. You should just probably hide in your room all day.
Yeah, Because whatever you do have to contribute, it's not going to be great. Or it's not going to be, even if it is good enough, mm-hmm. right? We both know with perfectionism, good enough is still not good enough.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't want you here at all. Mm-hmm. You know? I have this phone.
it's nice. That's awesome. Me too. I didn't know where you were going with that.
I know all of you listening here are peasants and you don't have one of these.
Like, seen one of these bad boys?
I have a phone, dude.
It's like cracked. I know.
That's what is that, an iPhone 6?
Shut up.
Actually.
Listen. I was going to make a really important point.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have this phone that everyone has, that most people own, and it's really beat up because I don't have a case on it.
I know. Why don't you have a case?
Because I like it without a case. I just like how it feels in my hand. So I don't have a case on it, so I've dropped it like a million times. And it's just cracked all over the place, and it looks really horrible. And sometimes it cuts my hand, but I keep it this way because it's like sharp.
That's crazy.
I'm just raw dogging it with my phone every day. But there is a sticker on it. This is the important part. There's a sticker that I've placed on it that I feel is a very fitting place for it because it's right where it's all cracked and beat up. That says...
She's like, there are drips of blood on it.
Don't mind it. That says, showing up imperfectly is better than not showing up at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just like a good reminder that if you look like my phone some days, right, and you feel really beat up and you feel like you're just out in the world doing your best and it's not looking good or pretty and you kind of look like a mess, that showing up is still better than not.
Yeah.
And the world still wants and needs you, even at your worst or even at your less than ideal. Mm-hmm. We have a professor that, I don't know if you guys have heard of him, Paul Parkin.
No,
we might have mentioned him. No, I don't think we ever have. He had opened up to us about some things going on in his life. And he's a teacher, obviously. And I remember one day he was having a very similar situation to you last week after the podcast, mm-hmm. where you were like, I did so horrible. I feel like this and this and this. And I remember we had said to him, we were like, Paul, dude, even on your literal worst day, you are still life changing.
Yeah.
Because we had sat in his class that he'd taught that afterward, he was like, that was such a horrible lesson and blah, blah. And I was like, Paul, that class that we just saw was like incredible. And if this is your off day is still life changing. And I believe that is true about most people. I think just showing up has more power than we think it does. And we take away from that power when we only allow ourselves to show up perfectly.
Yeah. And it really is so sad. Like, if you only allow yourself to show up perfectly, I don't know how many episodes we would even have or how many days I would do anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of sad to really think that that belief is somewhere inside of me that if I don't show up perfectly, then I might as well not.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Because you would never say that to me.
No.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely
I would
not.
Never say that to you. Like, mm-mm. The people in my life, I love all versions of them.
Mm-hmm. And it's also because the point isn't that we show up perfectly. Like, I don't show up and record a podcast episode because I want a perfect performance.
Mm-hmm.
I show up and record because I care about what we talk about. I believe that it is actually going to change people and it's an influence for good in the world. It's talking about a message that needs to be talked about. Like,
yeah,
it's the point deep inside of like why I want to do this. The driving motivator has nothing to do with showing up perfectly or how I show up at all, really. But perfectionism loves to make it about us.
Mm-hmm.
I think too, what's interesting about just showing up is perfectionists are crazy good, at least I think for the most part. Yeah, 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 they are. At covering their feelings. They're negative.
Yeah.
They're like hard, dark, negative feelings are super easy to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And people would probably not guess that I deal with depression. They wouldn't guess when I'm like having a super, super rough day or going through a lot of stuff because I've become that good at masking it.
Yeah.
And outperforming, like everything's fine. Like everything's okay. Like I can just perform and act like nothing's wrong. And so I think eventually that will crack. And I know we've talked about like theater makeup and how mm-hmm. perfectionism is like putting on the stage makeup, getting on stage and performing. But once you have stage makeup on so long, like you have to touch it up because it'll start cracking. Yep. The sweat will start to come down
the and like spotlight smear things. Gets the spotlight hot, is hot. Bright. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it can't be like that vibrant for that long. So eventually it just learned like it will crack and it will wear and the humanness will like break through the performance or the stage makeup, whatever we want to call it. And so I just thought that was a really interesting thing. That's like, I don't know why I've learned to mask so hard.
Yeah.
It probably goes back to like some childhood stuff.
Childhood drama, you know,
whatever. It for sure does. I've been reading a lot of The Holistic Psychologist. What?
Just like, I don't know. It could maybe be like childhood trauma. And then you're like, no, it is.
No, it actually, is. Alicia, it is. It really is. And I've been reading a lot of The Holistic Psychologist books. Dr. Nicole LaPera, right?
Mm-hmm. It's LaPera. Yeah. She's great.
She digs in a lot to like childhood stuff and where we learn to form certain habits. So it was probably somewhere along the line that I learned it wasn't safe for me to feel like share my feelings. Okay. I don't know.
What do you do?
I don't know when it happened, where it happened, but it happened. And she talks a lot about neuroplasticity as well in this book or this like section that I'm reading. I don't even know which one it is, but she talks about how the habits that we've become set in, the behaviors that we've set, the thoughts that we think, the more that we think them, the more that we do certain things, the more that we form a certain habit, it like blazes a trail in our minds that you are like wired to think this way. Mm. And it makes sense. Like when you walk through a path so many times, like you will start to actually see a trail. And that's the same in our brains. So she was talking about the power of neuroplasticity, though, that once these like trails have been set, you can still set new ones if you don't like that one. So if you learned certain things that are not great as a kid, or if you've historically like have a really bad habit, or you talk really mean to yourself or whatever it might be, you can change that. It just takes like consciously blazing a new path in your mind that's autopilot every single day.
Which takes work.
Which takes so much work. A lot of work,
yeah.
But all it takes is showing up differently. Like you just have to show up in a different way. And so, I mean, I think a lot of about like the gym. If you just show up, and sometimes, like, I remember at the beginning of working out without a soccer team or when I quit competitive sports, sometimes I would just have to show up to the gym and, like, not even do a full workout. Like, I would just walk on the treadmill and stretch and then go home. But just setting the habit of, like, showing up. Yeah. It didn't matter, like, how hard of a workout I did. I just had to show up and do something. But it then started to set a new pattern, like a new path for me to start pushing down. So I don't know. I was just thinking about neuroplasticity when we talk about showing up, because it is about just showing up in a different way. And we as perfectionists probably have to learn and rewire in our brains that you can just show up as is and you can just give it your all. And that's okay. That's acceptable. It's not embarrassing. You're not letting anyone down. And actually, no one really cares too.
Yeah.
Like, really, no one cares.
Because everyone is sitting, which this goes into our second point we wanted to talk about really well. We think that perfectionism has convinced us that everyone is micro-focused on us all the time.
Totally.
Right? And that all of our successes are the most important thing that's ever happened to anyone that knows us. And all of our failures are the most embarrassing, horrible thing that's ever happened. And that everyone's thinking about both all the time. But, like, us thinking that about ourselves, everyone else is thinking that about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just funny because we spend so much time, I spend so much time, like so much mental energy and mental real estate and like emotions trying to control that and trying to like minimize the bad and emphasize the good when it's no one really cares. No one cares about you as much as you think they do. And not, right, not caring is in like an affectionate way and caring about you. Mm-hmm. They do. But no one is thinking about you as much as you think they are.
No, not at all.
Like, probably not even close.
Mm-mm. Unless they're obsessed with you.
Yeah.
Get it. It's really true. And honestly, when I first had that realization that no one cares about me as much as I think that they do. It was a big, like, pride check, because it was kind of like, oh, really? Because, like, I assume everyone thinks about me all the time. Not really, but, like, that's kind of.
As
a perfectionist, it's like, you're so obsessed with, like, what does everyone else think about me? Or, like, how am I being perceived? Or, oh, my gosh, I did this one embarrassing thing. I recorded an average, not super great podcast episode. Now every single listener is going to be like, oh, do you guys remember season 4, episode whatever, when Alicia totally messed up? Like, no one, really, really no one cares.
Yeah.
And no one, like, is that critical of our performance.
Yeah.
And no one is sitting there thinking about, oh, sorry, I just hit the mic. No one is sitting there thinking about, like you said, your biggest successes and, wow, wasn't that just so amazing?
Wasn't that, like, world-stopping?
Yeah, like she's so cool.
Everyone has their own worlds. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I remember I had a moment where this, like, kind of hit me. I didn't know it was perfectionism really at the time, but it was in high school, my senior year. I played soccer all through high school. And my senior year was so good and it was so fun. And I was like a captain of the team. And I was the captain that all of the team members voted to be captain, because mm-hmm. the goalkeeper's always captain. And then there's two players that the coaches pick. And then there's one player that's nominated by the team. And so it was like such an honor to me to be the captain that the team wanted, like to lead them, you know. And that just meant a lot to me. And I loved my team. I still love my team. And it was just like a big deal. But that year, it was like probably a few games into our season, my goalkeeper broke her leg, like super bad.
Yikes.
She broke her tibia bone, the shin bone, like in half. Like it snapped. And I was playing center back, like the last defender. So I was really close to her when it happened. And it was so loud. Like, ugh. And anyway, I don't need to provide all these details.
That's horrible.
Anyway, it was super sad because, first of all, broken leg. Second, she was a really good goalkeeper and she, like, wanted to play college and do these things. Mm. And her season just barely started. Like, her senior year, playing for her high school team as the goalkeeper, I think we're, like, what, 3 games in or so, and she breaks her leg. So the whole season is done. Mm. Like, it was just so devastating. But she showed up to, like, every game that she could after surgery, and she would sit there on the sidelines, and she would cheer us on and whatever. It was awesome. Like, she was still a captain to us. Like, she still would show up, which I thought was so cool. So the end of the season comes around. I had a great season. I had a lot of fun. I loved, like, being a captain, and I took meeting with my teammates really seriously and helping them and being, like, a good example and blah, 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 blah. Being a perfectionist, thinking that everyone is thinking about how great I am because they wanted me to be a cat. Like, no one cares. No one's really thinking about me. They probably just sat in front of the piece of paper and coach is like, all right, who would you want to be a captain? And they're like, oh, Alicia's kind of cool. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like Alicia would, like, change this season for us.
I mean, that's what I would think if I was, like, voting personally.
Well, maybe some people were like, oh, she, like, is really positive and she's whatever, but no one, like, it wasn't as heavy to anyone as it was to me.
Okay, yeah.
So the end of the season comes around and we always have, like, a dinner to celebrate the season and we have awards and all of this stuff. And my coach presents this award and it's the most inspirational player of the season. And for some reason, I thought it was gonna be me. Compared to, like, a captain who broke her leg 3 games into the season and showed up all the time and cheered us on. I was like, this one's mine for sure. For sure. This is my moment to shine. And so I'm just sitting in my chair. I'm, like, already blushing. I'm already, like, thinking about what I want to say, like, all of this stuff. And as he starts describing this player, I'm like, oh, wait, that's – what? Like, they didn't vote for me to be the most inspirational player of the season. And he said, yeah, it's Kirsten Josie. I love Kirsten. I doubt she listens to this, but whatever. My teammate Josie. And she, like, oh, gets on her crutches and goes up there. And everyone's like so stoked for her, as they should be, because she had a killer season. But I was, like, sitting in my chair, like, what the hell?
You're like, just, like, Scrooge booing little Timmy or whatever.
Yeah, literally. Like,
get off the stage. Oh, wait, you can't.
No one cares. Yeah. Kick her crutches. Oh, yeah. No, I'm just kidding. That's so dark. But I was like so prideful in that moment to think that, like, also who cares? Me, perfectionists.
Yeah.
Like, they want that award. They want like that shiny thing to put on their shelf to say like, I was inspirational.
Or I was better than anyone on my team, right? Because it's the superhuman element of being a perfectionist, that you have to be above the average person.
Yeah.
And what is better to manifest that like physically than an award?
Right? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the thing with awards too, it really doesn't matter and no one cares. And I bet you that any player on my team, if I was like, hey, 2015, it's the winter. Who won the most inspirational player of the year? They're gonna be like, you? Why are you asking me? Like, they're not gonna know at all.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it was just a really humbling moment for me, and I've had a lot of moments like that where I have to check my pride, and in the most positive, loving, self-compassionate way, just like, hey, it's no one really cares, and that's like an okay thing.
That's a freeing thing.
Very freeing thing, because then they also don't care about when you mess up. In fact, like, people are probably more likely to remember something great you did than something embarrassing you did. And so it's like all of the things that you're probably holding on to, no one else is.
Yeah.
So just like leave it behind you, literally.
Yeah, totally. We've quoted this before. It's one of, I would say it's a pillar of my life. And something we quote a lot. And it's that quote by Noah Martinez. He's someone I used to work with. And he said, leadership is not about getting people to like you. It's about getting other people to like themselves.
Yes.
Which is an incredible sentiment. And, right, because we often think of great leaders as these people who, you know, are well-liked and adored and admired and applauded. And at the end of the day, a great leader is not someone who gets all those accolades. It's someone who put the spotlight on someone else, right? Totally. And helped that person see what was really great about them. And I had a friend a few years ago. He was super involved in our community. Everyone loved this guy. Okay, his name was Dave. Dave was the best. And
in Morgan?
Surprisingly. I know, good old Motown. He lived in Spanish Fork, and he was like, he trained Navy SEALs and like had trainings on how to keep schools safe from school shootings, and like just was like this like animal of a man, just so fit, really charming, and like could hang out with like, you know, teens and young adults, even though he was like older, and just had this like swag about him. Like everyone just loved him. And whenever I was talking to him, and I know a lot of people share the sentiment, you felt like you were the most important thing happening in his entire life. This man was training Navy SEALs during the day, and then he would come see me at like a community event thing, and it was just all on me, and it was all, you know, what could be better about me and my life and everything. And every time I came to him with a problem, every time he would bring me down a little bit. He'd be like, Anna, it's not about you, dude. It is not about you. Whether it was like, hey, I'm struggling to like succeed in this part of my life, or hey, I'm struggling with this person, or hey, this really good thing happened to me, he'd be like, oh, great. He's like, but it's not about you. Like, it really isn't. And that's how he lived his entire life. And then in the summer of 2021, I got a message from someone, like a mutual person in our lives. And he said, hey, did you hear about Dave Acosta? And I had just assumed that he had just, do you know him, Ryan?
I do, yeah.
You
do?
Yeah.
I had a feeling you were talking about him.
Yeah. See? So well loved. I just assumed, I was like, oh, he probably got some award or like was traveling and went on another like cool trip or something.
Yeah, did something cool.
And I was like, oh, well, you know what? Well, you know what happened? And he was mountain biking and he went off a jump wrong and he died.
Oh my gosh.
He broke his neck. Yeah. And his funeral was held at the Spanish Fork Fairgrounds. And it was filled. It was filled. The whole stands were filled with people. And for this one guy, and it was the one guy who never made it about himself, who never put the spotlight on himself. And then I just think of all the other people in my life, me included, who often beg for the spotlight and fight for it. And not that this should matter, but I'm like, you know, how many people would show up to my funeral as I am today? I'm sure a lot of people that care about me. And again, that's not what it's about, but I'm sick just kidding. That day. But like just the proportions of this is a guy who was really well liked, really admired, really respected, but he never made it about that. He always made it about whoever he was talking to and whoever else was in his life. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people that showed up for him at his funeral like showed that.
Yeah.
And so if you really want to make a difference in the workplace, on your team, being a leader, whatever that looks like, it is not about getting other people to like you. It's about getting other people to like themselves.
Yes, I love that. And I think it's interesting because perfectionists really do want to make a difference, I think. Right? I mean, yes, I should say yes, because I do. But sometimes it just takes stepping outside of yourself. And I don't think it originally is rooted in pride. I think a lot of it is rooted in fear.
Yes.
Because, you know, even in the definition that we refer to a lot of perfectionism, it's the like trying to look perfect or appear a certain way to avoid being rejected, to avoid being hurt, to avoid letting people down. So it's like you're being afraid of something. But really, when you realize that you don't have a lot to be afraid of and you can step outside of yourself, that's when you can really make a change. Because mm-hmm. you will never change someone's life because of how long your resume is. You'll never change someone's life because you got 10 awards and they got 5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll never influence someone because of how amazing your body is, because of how beautiful you are, because you have the highest paying job. Like, you influence people because of how you make them feel.
Mm-hmm.
So really, perfectionism, I guess, can hurt us a lot from making an influence, making a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, it can hold us back from that a ton. Because again, the more time that you're spending trying to maintain or get the spotlight, mm-hmm. the less time you're spending connecting to other people or trying to help them up, you know?
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, totally. And this goes along with something that I have been thinking about for a hot second. And I think it's definitely originated within perfectionism. Oh, wait, did you have anything else to say about that other point?
Okay,
I just kept talking. So, but I think the last couple of years, especially since we started this podcast for sure, which was about 3.5 years ago, but the last couple of years, especially this like belief system I've had has kind of been like unraveling about how I viewed the world and life. And it's like made me really mad. And the last couple of years, especially the last little while, I've been trying to pick apart like why. And the conclusion I've come to is I am mad that we are not guaranteed anything in this life ever. Right. And the reason I'm mad about that is not because not because it should be another way, because that's what life is. You're not guaranteed, but because perfectionism tricked me into thinking if I did everything the way I was supposed to, and I did it when I was supposed to, and I did it how I was supposed to, that I would get X, Y, and Z. I would get happiness in this way. I would find this person or this job or this opportunity because I did everything perfectly, right? We talk about the Brené Brown quote of perfectionism. If we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can avoid feelings like pain, blame, judgment, and shame, which are all things that can be avoided or are not part of the equation for these things that we want, right? Mm-hmm. And I just, it has made that part of my brain so upset because it's like, I did all of the things I thought I was supposed to do, how I was supposed to do them. And I don't have this, I don't have this, I don't have this. And so it just has been this, I guess like core belief, right? That like I'm guaranteed these things if I live perfectly or close to it or seem perfect. Mm-hmm. And we're just not, no one is guaranteed anything. Right. And this realization I found because I was angry about some things, but really at the core of my anger was I've become really bitter.
Yeah.
About a lot of things. And my friend had sent me this reel where this guy talked about how bitterness is the opposite of vulnerability. And that if you're bitter about something, that is a part of yourself that you don't want to be vulnerable. And so you've become bitter about it to shield it, right? And to cope. And so that's been really eye-opening for me, is to piece out like what parts of myself are bitter and why. And it's like, oh, because I got hurt there multiple times while doing everything perfectly. I still got hurt. And it happened enough times, I am now bitter there. And I need to work on that, right? Like I need to work to work through that so I can become vulnerable again, because that's how you connect with people. But Yeah.
I wonder if also part of it is because one of your core values is fairness.
Oh, yes, it is.
Anna did a core values test recently. And what did you get? Fairness, achievement, and...
Caring.
So I wonder if part of it is like that, where it's like, I worked hard, I've been a good person, I've done blah, 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 blah. This isn't fair.
Yeah.
Like, this is just not fair.
Yeah.
And there's the lifelong saying where it's just like, life is not fair. Yeah. Life isn't fair. And that's like kind of the point of being a good person and showing up vulnerably and doing what you feel you should, because you don't do it for a reward. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't do it because someone gives you a gold star. You do it because that's what you want to do. But like, in the spirit of fairness and perfectionist being like, okay, I act this way so I can get something, whether it is the reward, whether it is like the applause, whatever it might be. So it's like, where is that? Why is it radio silence?
Yeah. And the belief that, because we all know life isn't fair, right? That's mm-hmm. not like news to anyone. But perfectionism will convince you that you're above that, right? It, again, it is that superhuman element where it's like, well, yeah, life's not fair for everyone. But if I live perfectly, that won't apply to me. Mm-hmm. I can be the exception.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true. And I mean, I think in one area of my life that I relate to that a lot is with like romantic relationships, having been divorced and recently gone through a breakup, which also people aren't going to listen to this for a while, so I'll be fine when it comes out. But I mean, I was married for 3 years and I was in this last relationship for 2 years, but it's like, okay, I'm still not married. I still don't have, it feels like I don't have anything to show for it. Perfectionism loves having something to show for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I did this mm-hmm. for something, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't all for naught, right? Mm-hmm. And no one can see that on the outside, but I did it. Like, I did it because of who I am. And I've also become someone better because of it. But it can be hard. Like, when you're tired of like doing what you should, and you're tired of being good, and things aren't on their way yet, you feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially at work, mm-hmm. especially in your job, especially when you're trying to accelerate your career and either climb that corporate ladder, baby, or start your own business or whatever it is. And you're like, I am doing everything I should be doing, and I'm doing it well, and I'm being the good person, girl, good guy, whatever. And it's just not mm-hmm. happening yet.
Yeah. And I think one thing that helped me a lot through those difficult relationships and losing them is realizing that I do have something I can take away from it. Like, I can take away something, and that is what I've learned about myself. And our good old therapist, Joe Allred, was the one that helped me realize that, because it helps you kind of claim power over time and over your life. It's not like you haven't been doing it for nothing. Like, I've learned so much about myself through different relationships. And it's not even about what you learned about the other person, because they're gone now. Like, they're off doing their own thing. You guys are separate, going separate ways. So it doesn't matter what you learned about them. Like, you can still love and cherish that, and love and cherish the relationship and that person and what it was. But you moving forward day by day, like, you have control over that, over what you're learning and over what you're gathering, even if it's not the accolades you want, or even if it's not like the picture perfect life that you're thinking of. We still have power over what we can take.
Yeah. And perfectionism will have you believing that you don't, mm-hmm. right? There's no next step with perfectionism. There's no, we'll get it next time, right? We'll try again. It's just, if you messed up, if you failed, if you, whatever it is, whether it's a failed relationship, a failed whatever, that is you now. And that is how you are. And there's not a next time, right? There's not any way to win that back or work that back through. That's just how you are. And that's a very fixed and limited mindset. And it's also not a real thing, mm-hmm. right? There's always a next time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
There will always be a next. And even if there's not, right? Even if you're never in a relationship ever again, like, there is always a next time for you to grow as a person and to change and to become, whether or not you have someone beside you during that process.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
I will always have you beside me.
Unless it's my funeral.
So dark. I'm like, don't go. Squeeze my it harder. That's so insensitive. Anyway, don't go anywhere. Stay with me. One feeling that perfectionism also brings up a lot for me, not so much the bitterness. I don't relate a lot to that, but I relate a lot to defensiveness. Because I'm someone who can get kind of defensive over my weaknesses, I guess I'll say. If I feel like I'm being attacked, which sometimes doesn't take a lot. Like, if I'm someone who I feel like I'm being put on trial for something, I can get really defensive and be like, no, you don't understand because blah, 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 blah. Like, I can come up with so many reasons. I'm trying to think of a specific example, honestly, right now.
I'm trying to think of one for you. When have you been put on trial recently? Yeah, when have you gotten defensive recently?
I'm sure it happens all the time. I mean, it really does. Okay. For example, sometimes I wear slacks to church. Sue me.
What's it like being a heathen, Alicia? I
know, right? Apparently, my mom disapproves of this. And, well, it's not necessarily that she disapproves of it with her facial expressions, but with her words, she doesn't. So it's very confusing to me sometimes. But a lot of it is because my mom is a CODA. She's a child of deaf adults. And so she was raised in deaf culture. ASL was like her first language. And it's very, very expressive.
Yeah.
It's like all up here. I mean, obviously, it's like your hands too. But so much of it is expression. And curiosity looks more like this, like, than like, oh, that's interesting. Like, eyebrows raised. Instead of like
open.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
And so what I see is like, are you wearing that to church? Instead of like, is that what you're wearing to church?
Oh, okay.
So it's immediate like disapproval, whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, mom, do you have a problem with it? Like something like that.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, yeah, what do you think? Like I just get so defensive. I'm like, geez, mom. I guess it's a lot with my family and in romantic relationships and stuff. But this conversation could continue because I do think there is a little bit of disapproval sometimes. She was telling me like, maybe it's because I'm a feminist and stuff.
And if
I'm willing to like blaze that trail of feminism, I have to be prepared for questions and the looks or the comments and stuff. And I think a lot of it is like generational too. But either way, when I feel like the person I'm trying to portray, like my shield or my persona that I am putting out there, if it's like attacked or if it's perceived as what it's not or something like that, I can get defensive. It's just like, wait, that's so not true, that's not who I am, blah 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 blah. But in reality, it kind of doesn't matter. You could also express more curiosity instead of defensiveness and be like, yeah, mom, like I am wearing this, what do you think? Or if someone is like, hey, Alicia, it really hurts me that you take a long time to text back, because that's something that I do, that's a weakness of mine, and people that like hurts people sometimes when I don't respond for months, you know, and they're like, do you even care about me? And it's valid that they could feel that way. And instead of trying to defend myself, like I just need to be okay with the fact that some people might perceive me as like disrespectful or I don't care about them, because whether that's true or not, that's how they feel.
Yeah.
So I just have to be like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like,
yeah,
that's not what I meant. But either way, like I really hurt you and I'm sorry. That's not cool.
Yeah. And it's such a fruitless endeavor to try to control people's perceptions of you, right? We've talked about it a million times. Like, you're going to waste your life away trying to control people's perceptions of you. And something Alicia and I, we will continue researching, but that we found recently is there are currently three identities basically that show up when you're a perfectionist, and it is bitterness, defensiveness, and shame. And there's more for sure, and we'll find them as we continue researching all this stuff. But those are the three that we've found that come up. And sometimes I feel like you can adopt multiple of those identities, right?
For sure.
But those are the three that can help you figure out like, okay, I'm bitter here. I'm defensive here. I'm feeling shameful here. Why? What's behind that? What is being masked by the shame, the defensiveness, and bitterness? Because it's obviously shielding something that you don't want to look at or you don't want to acknowledge.
Yeah.
Whether it's a pain or a hurt, a weakness, whatever.
Yeah, because if you take bitterness, it's like, okay, what do I feel like I'm entitled to because of how good I've been?
Because I got cheated of something. Yeah. That's why I'm bitter. Yeah. I got betrayed. Yeah.
Totally. So it's like, where do I feel like I've been wronged? Mm-hmm. Maybe ask yourself that question. If it's defensiveness, it's like, what am I defending? Like, why, how come you're displaying defensiveness over like curiosity and looking outward? And with shame, I think the easiest way to dispel that, I don't even know if it's a question you could ask yourself, but shame loves secrecy. It thrives in secret.
Grows in the dark.
Yeah, it grows in the dark. And so that's why we love connectionism so much. The belief that, you know, things that might make you feel shameful, things that you're embarrassed of, things that are awkward, things that are painful, mistakes that you've made, those are actually what will connect you to other people.
Yeah.
And those are things that you will need to share to have real, meaningful, deep connection.
Yeah.
Yep. So do it.
So do it. That's all we got for you today, you guys.
We didn't even tell them about Survivor, Anna.
Oh, no. Okay. We'll tell you guys quickly. So Alicia and I are in a local Survivor competition, and it started with 18 people, you guys. And guess where we're at now? Final four, baby. Check it. Check the scoreboard of our hands. Four. And we go to the final challenge next weekend, and it's going to be an American Ninja Warrior obstacle style course at a trampoline park.
Yeah, with the other, like, 12-year-old kids that are there.
Yeah, and the other two finalists that are, like, athletes.
But I know, fine. It's fine. It's
We're
fine.
Athletes.
It's fine. We'll fight our way through.
Yeah, so anyway.
We'll keep you posted, but if I have anything to do with it, I kind of want to win.
She's going to win, you
What
guys.
About you, Anna? I'd be happy if you won, too.
Really?
Yeah, I really would.
Smile for the camera. Okay, great.
If you win, I'm totally proud.
Wow, likewise.
Thank you. Thank
likewise.
You. I really hope it happens.
Anyway, that's it.
That's all we have for you. Thank you so much for listening. We hope to have you next week.
Mm-hmm. My name's Anna.
My name's Alicia.
And this is Popping Perfectionism.